Thank you all for coming. It's nice to see everyone. Everyone's a familiar face, so that's very nice. I like that. Oh, no problem. The bathroom's back there, by the way. So. Anyways, I just want to thank all of you for coming to the Monochrome Shop. I hope that all of you made it to the opening. If I didn't see you, it was because it was kind of crazy in here. But I just wanted to give a few thanks to a few certain people. This exhibition wouldn't have been possible without the support of Unit Pit, especially Keith and Bryn. They're both really amazing people. I really didn't know Keith at all until now, and I always had kind of a funny idea of who he was because he was a very grumpy kind of guy behind the bar at the old Unit Pit. But he's actually a really wonderful man, so I'm really happy to have him work with us on this project. Also, I have to thank the Canada Council, the British Columbia Council of the Arts, and the fine city of Vancouver, BC, which I find quite wonderful. Also, a big thank you to Mark Cunningham, and also Andrew Smith. We've been planning this show for about a year, and it finally came to life, and I'm happy with the results. So, thank you, Mark. I also have to give a special thanks to Heidi Nigdahl, but I guess just in the way that she's kind of the reason why I'm here. So anyways, I'll go on. Tonight I want to talk about one thing in this exhibition. I think a lot of times in artist talk, a lot of people do kind of some kind of short retrospective of their work with a slide machine. I think that can be interesting, but oftentimes it doesn't really focus on anything particular in an exhibition, and it can be very broad, and there's not much room for criticality in that kind of presentation. So tonight I'm focusing on one aspect, because there's many different aspects of this exhibition. For me, I think one aspect that really came up was the continuity of all the work. A surprising amount of people came up to us and explained that they weren't sure who made each piece, which I was surprised by. Because normally, I think me and Mark's work, and then Andrew also, have quite a different type of way of working, and definitely a different type of aesthetic sensibility. But somehow we kind of morphed it all together and made something that looks like a coherent exhibition. I won't talk about that, but it's there. I also think that there's a lot of humor in this show, which I think is very important, especially in, well, basically where we are, this location, and also the location of the city in relation to where I'm from, which is the United States, where everything's funny, even if it's terrible. So what I do want to focus on is just this film that Andrew Smith and I made as a collaboration. And I want to focus mostly on the song that is used, and I'm sure that most of you were able to listen to it. I'm not going to turn it on now because you won't be able to hear it clearly, but it's a very special song by Miles Davis. It's on his very, very famous album, Kind of Blue, which I'm sure you're all very familiar with. I hope so. If you're not, then you should be. But the song itself isn't a very popular song. Well, that's a bad way to say it. It is a very popular song, but it's not the hits. It's not, Freddie Freeloader. It's not All Blues. It's sandwiched between those songs, and it comes on as this kind of... It's a great breaking point in the album. I don't think it'll ever be a hit like those songs. It's not going to be on major motion pictures. It's not poppy enough. It's too romantic. It's too quiet. And I think that's the reason why I was able to fall in love with that song. It has a quietness, and it has a... It's like a loneliness that's really important, and especially in the time of my life when I first heard this album, which I'll say wasn't that long ago. So I learned my lesson by getting that album. But yeah, it's different than the rest of the music. And it's different than a lot of jazz ballads. It's not going to be like your classic smooth kind of jazz ballad. It's got some real puncture to it in certain points. You know, I'll go into the song a little bit more, but it's definitely got some sharp edges to it in this kind of lonesome ballad that just kind of floats through the entirety of the song. So, but yeah. Let's see, next thing about that song. I did do a little bit of research on Miles' kind of inspiration for this song. You know, it was about being a kind of a lonesome feeling. I don't have a quote, but the poet Quincy Trope said that Miles wrote that song to get back to the feeling when walking at night and hearing gospel music waft through the trees when he was 6 years old, walking home from church at night. So when Miles wrote the song, he said that he was very interested in trying to capture that kind of feeling. I think that that feeling is a very phenomenological one and probably not very easy to capture. But you can kind of sense that. It's definitely like a night song. You know, it's not like a bright, sunshiny day song. It's reserved for night. And I think that him having that inspiration, being able to write it at night and longing for that kind of feeling made it what it is. And also, I mean, the players on it too. It's, you know, it's Bill Evans who is on the piano. He's kind of got a special way of playing piano. It's a very soft, I mean, he does have some sharp chords, and he is a chord kind of person, but he's known for his softness. He's known for his kind of romantic kind of twist on some of the songs that he plays or has written. So this was the first album that Miles had Evans on, and then we also have Paul Chambers on bass. We have Jimmy Cobb was on the drums. You can barely hear the drums at all in the song. It's kind of just a snare tap with a brush, and it's nice. It just goes through the whole song. And then Julian Cannonball Adderley is on the album. He's not on that song. It's just John Coltrane, who lends a beautiful, beautiful saxophone solo to the middle of the song, which is kind of important in the video because it is danced to kind of in a certain way. So if you have time to look at the video, I'd highly recommend it and listen for Coltrane's solo. But going back to what Trope was saying about, you know, Miles trying to find that feeling of the gospel coming through the trees, Miles admitted that he never was able to find that. He never got back to that spot. He never got back to that feeling of walking through the woods with his friend home from church. So in the end, it's kind of a sad kind of thing, which brings me to the idea that it's a true love song, even though almost all songs are love songs. But it's very true. It's a very romantic kind of song. And I think for me, for this video, it was really important that we had a love song, obviously, because I needed to fall in love. Also, if you guys have any like questions or added comments or any other jazz history things you want to mention on the way, let me know, because you know, I know you love jazz, so say something. But you know, this song is kind of special, though. The other thing I found out about it is I think it's written, the rhythm section's written in 5 measures instead of like somewhat traditional 4. I don't know in jazz if that's that traditional, but you know, it's not your pop song. It's really hard to find the stop and start of the rhythm section. I think it adds to its kind of malleability. Like, it's a very malleable song. It takes a lot of listens to actually kind of find all the breaks and find all the points when things are enacted, when things kind of get activated. It's just got a different cool tempo, and it doesn't really have a drum beat. You know, it's just kind of got the soft brushing. So it really is, I would almost call it liquid or malleable. It's just not as solid as the rest of the song. So in that way, I mean, it was a perfect kind of song to do a dance like this too. You know, I didn't, for me, when I think about the video and the dancing, I mean, you know, I'm not a dancer, and I don't have a choreographer. I'm not interested in finding one. I was more so interested in kind of trying to find a place in the song that was danceable, or a way to dance to the song. It's not an easy thing. Like, I don't know what jazz dancing is. I've heard of it. It sounds strange. So I didn't, you know, I never wanted to be a jazz dancer, but maybe I am now. I don't know. That's weird. But you know, it had to be a soft thing. It couldn't be hard, because then it would be too easy to make something that looked like a dance. So either way, so that's Miles' song. We made a different song. I mean, we took Blue and Green and we recorded it. We recorded it at 120 frames per second, and we slowed this song down a considerable amount, I think 0.25, I can't remember, I don't know. The original song's 5:38 in time, and this video stretched to 22 minutes and 33 seconds or something. It is stretched the song to be extremely slow. We corrected the pitch, so all the pitches are correct, but are back up to where they should be. But it really changes the song. Everything's still there, of course. We didn't do any editing to that. We only edited the time, but there are breaks in and there's breaks in the original song. There's parts where Evans will stop at the end, and you're waiting for the next hit, and the rhythm just gets, I don't know music, but it doesn't come into play like where you feel it should. You're always kind of like tripping on the notes. And when you slow things down, I mean, that trip is going to be a huge, huge break. And I think for me in the video, it adds a lot of tension. It's very important, because you get to listen to this song in a very different way. You don't have to listen to it, you know, you can rest on it. You can begin to have a slow read on something that is usually just an enjoyable thing. It's a very good song. You know, you just want to listen to it. You're forced into a different way of hearing. Going back to the puncture of the song, and some of those parts that in a ballad aren't very common, or maybe in certain ballads, but not in smooth jazz ballads. There's the first note that Miles blows in this trumpet on the song is extremely harsh, and a lot of people have a lot of criticism about that first note, because it's like a screeching baby. It sounds kind of like shit, but it's not, I think it's very important, because it wakes you up. You know, Bill Evans is going into the song so lightly and in such a beautiful way, but Miles just comes ripping in and then delivers this very kind of muted, cool solo to start off the song, and to kind of set up the whole chord progression too. But it's that first note that just, it sounds, it's really stressed out. And it's sharp. It wakes you up. A lot of people think that the song was written in, or it was recorded in one take. That's not true. It was quite a few. It was recorded in one day though. So there is a lot of improv, and those solos that you're hearing are very improv. So, but when you take something like that first hit, that first note that Miles does, which is already kind of extended, and you slow it down, it just becomes a drone. You lose, I think it's related to the monochrome in that way too. Like, you lose, like, let's say you say the same word over and over and over again. It loses meaning. The notes almost are able to lose a little bit of meaning. They lose a little bit of tone when they're stretched out this far. And then this, the silent spaces in the song, because there's quite a few, especially when it's a slow, because something else that, that add tension to that, you have to listen for other weird noises. There's a lot of heel clicking and stuff going on that's kind of added into the to our song. So I think it was important to slow it down. We weren't sure what to do with the pitch at first. I wanted to leave it really low and have it very abstract and sound bad, but I was convinced to go up, back up to the normal pitch, and I'm really happy I did, because it wouldn't be the same thing, and it wouldn't be recognizable as music the same way it is now. And I don't think it would have been as constructive as a move. So, you know, I don't know if going to the deep, dark kind of noises that were produced would be ultimately very, very interesting and have something to do with painting more, represent what that image is. I don't really know what that painting is, though. Like, it's just a painting, and it's not very good. So, you know, maybe it would have had, kind of more reverence with that image, but I don't think so. But let's go back into this a little bit more. So the other thing I think that's interesting about those breaks, the breaks in between, let's say, like, when Coltrane does his solo, there's a lot of breaks where he's taking breaths. And you hear those breaths on the song, it sounds like he's taking a breath, because you have to take a breath when you play a horn. But in this song, in our song, you don't have to think about it like a breath. You can think about it as this person who's actively and highly trained and is also a genius is making a decision. They're making their next decision. They're going through the scale, and they're deciding what note they want to hit next. A lot of it is muscle memory, and a lot of it is skill, but then a lot of it is, like, imagination to make it unique. Because if they just ran through a scale up and down and up and down, there's a lot of jazz players that do that. It's really boring. It's not good. But you actually can have that moment with them. Because I think the normal person who doesn't play music isn't going to be able to think about that, to have that breath with them. I wouldn't be able to. And it's something that I learned after we did this. I didn't think about it this way until now. So I really like that about the silent space in the video. And I think, you know, as a painter, even though I haven't painted that much, it's something that you have to do. When you make a painting like this one, or like the ones that I made for this show, there's all these decisions that you make, and you have to stop. You have to have these silent spaces. You can't just keep painting a painting. Even though this kind of looked like it, it would be so dumb if you did, you know? You have to take a break, and you have to make a decision, but with those types of paintings, they're based on muscle memory. It's informed by your body, too. It's not just your mind. If you're doing just your mind all the time, I think you get something like that painting, just very boring. It was the student that asked if it was art yesterday. I can't answer that. So, you know, you have to make these decisions. They're not purely intellectual. They do have, you know, they're born from the body also. So I think that was important to kind of come to. And it happened with slowing the song down. If we go into the work a little bit more, and actually the video, I can kind of tell you about it. I wish I would have started it at the start, but I can probably kind of tell where it is. The video starts with the painting really close to the screen. In fact, it might be restarting now, but it's basically a color field of gray. It would normally be green. As you can see, if you take a look at the sculpture, you can see the green color that it would be, but I find that painting so ugly that there was talks about leaving it in color, and I was like, no, not gonna happen. Do not do that. It's just such an ugly painting. But it starts with just kind of a monochromatic field, and it slowly moves. And, you know, like I said, this is a dance that's not choreographed, but it is in tune with what's going on. So the painting moves and moves, kind of dances in a slow dance. And then once Miles hits that terrible note, or beautiful note, depending on which side you're on, I spin and do... Oh, I know where this is now. Okay. It's at the end of the first solo. So, anyway. Now, this is Bill Evans' part, his first solo. Anyways, I'll get into that, too. But I spin, and I can reveal myself, my own body, and I reveal the back of the painting. And, I mean, the spinning is just kind of a response to the heightened sonic, you know, activity in the song. And kind of just like, how do you dance to this? I think I just spun a lot because it seemed like a good idea. It seemed like a nice thing to do. And it also seemed like a way to activate the painting. Like, I wanted the painting to become something that was like, it could have a relationship with the song. Maybe like, is it Yves Klein? He liked jazz music. You know, it's gesture. I needed gesture. And so spinning was good. It activated the work in a way. It made the surface of the canvas actually activate. It kind of, each brush stroke in there will kind of move separately, like, yeah, when my legs hit it. And that becomes important to me because automatically your eye will focus on that. So start the dance off like that. And with my partner, the painting, swinging him around and kind of following Miles' lead. And at the end of that solo, I do my bow, which I needed something to kind of signify different parts of the song for myself. So after that bow, Bill Evans does his first solo. Evan's solos are very, I think the first one is double time. It's very fast and very complicated, and so I decided to do some fancy footwork for that. You can't see it, which is another point of contention in this video and the creation of it. I'll get to that in a second. I tried to kind of move with Bill Evans in a way that I felt... You know, it's a rhythm section. I didn't feel like big swooping movements would be appropriate for that. So I felt like doing double time, two-step movements would be appropriate. And I tried to kind of have that kind of chatter going on. Which I think for me, after doing so many takes of this video, because we did quite a bit, became really violent and kind of forced in a way, because those are the parts of the song that I think are really the most poetic and actually kind of really sad. So they're really kind of violent. If you watch this video in real time, it's like a mess. It looks like a domestic violence or something. It's not like this. It's not as beautiful. So, you know, there's all these signifiers of the bowing to stop each solo and then go to the next one. As you see, this is probably the Coltrane solo, where it gets very, 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 like, wavy, wispy. I mean, his solos are much more... It's a saxophone. It's a very malleable kind of instrument, the sound. It's not like Miles' notes where he would just carry these long notes flat. Coltrane's kind of all over the place, and he does quite a beautiful job. So, you know, we get into that a little bit, and doing the bow. I think I do a bow for this, and it goes back to Bill Evans again. But, yeah, I couldn't help myself to not go crazy during those times, and it was very, I think it's really important that the video got slowed down, because it just would have been crazy. During the Coltrane solo thing, to get very dramatic, I guess that's the other part of this video, and I talked about humor a little bit in this exhibition, which I think is really important, because our exhibition is kind of about something that's kind of it's not the funnest idea, it's kind of Like, no one really likes to talk about money. No one likes to deal with money. It's not fun, but like I said, if you can laugh about it, it makes it a little bit easier. So I do like the Coltrane part. It is quite comedic because I am so dramatic with my movements, and you've got a wailing saxophone. To me, that is quite funny in a way, even though it's funny, but it's like, when I hear the song, it's like, it's a sad song. It's like, the tears come, and the funny stuff isn't, it's just funny when you're dancing with a painting, I think. So, anyways, I was happy to see that there was some humor that kind of flowed through this video, but, you know, like, it's kind of getting violent here, you know, this is definitely the Coltrane solo. So the humor is there, but I would say that it's severely limited. It's you know, it's funny if you can think about saxophones being funny, which they are. So, but let's see. I mean, the other thing is, and I question this quite a bit, was the setup of the camera. Right now in the video is going to be the only point really where you can see my whole body. Which I had a lot of big deal problems with. I didn't think that was a very good idea. I felt like, why wouldn't this be set up in a more traditional way where you can actually see the dancer, where you can actually see the dance happening, can make some kind of language out of it? Because the language of dance that I'm doing isn't very coherent, especially if you have any dance backgrounds, which I hope none of you do. If you do, that's great. Maybe we can do a class. I don't know. I didn't know really what I was doing, but I do love dancing. But the setup of the camera, it became really important in the way that this painting, for me, I mean, this whole project is about falling in love. This whole project is about falling in love with a painting. This whole project is about, well, this project, not this whole project, but this whole project is about falling in love with a monochrome and being able to do that. And for that to happen, this monochrome has to be personified. There needs to be points in this video where all you can see is the monochrome dancing by itself. It needs to have its own human qualities. And by cutting off my feet and my head and kind of depersonifying myself, I'm able to make that happen. I'm able to make this canvas dance on its own and just eliminate my own body at certain times so you can become a true partner of my dance. It's something that, you know, it came out of, I don't know if it was an accident, but it needed to happen. And I think it does, but, you know, it's very difficult to, it's not difficult to fall in love with an object, but one that you deal with on such a daily basis. I mean, it's like when you're in a long-term relationship, how do you keep that love going? So I needed this painting to be more than it ever was. This painting's been exhibited before. It needed to have that life of its own. Like now it's just dancing by itself. And I think that was really important in this film, and really important in the way that it was filmed. There's parts where it kind of floats backwards too, which I kind of found really strange. I don't know how that happens. But I mean, a lot of that too, falling in love with a painting is difficult. I mean, paintings are really easy to see now. You see them on the internet quite a bit, but they're really hard to look at, I think, unless you're a painter. And I'm interested in not just painters falling in love with paintings. I'm interested in not just painters looking at paintings. And, you know, I hate to do, you know, subject this painting to such a spectacle or something, but I think it allows you to kind of look at the work. It allows you to take this old dingy green painting that just isn't very attractive and see it in a different light where it moves. It activates some of the brush strokes that were created before and that are in the painting. It's a different way to look. It's going to stay static the whole time, but it's constantly moving, which I think is a strange thing to say about a painting, because I would say they're far from static. They're just perceived to be. It's same with photographs. I think people consider them very static. I don't believe that's true. These footprints that we made, I mean, I can tell that one's already collecting dust quite a bit, and it's not the same as it looked when we pulled it out of the shipping sheet or whatever. So it's quite different, and I think it's important to be able to see that. That's all just in the way to fall in love with the work. I mean, you can just not love paintings, it's fine. But if you want to, you have to make these kind of sacrifices, I think. Take a little, it's a suspension of disbelief, I think. So, I feel like, you know, I felt like I made a connection with my dance partner. I felt like I fell in love a little bit. I did this dance so many times, and it became something intimate. And it became something that I was looking forward to dancing each time with it. And trying to figure out what that, you know, how to bring that to an audience. But, you know, the whole reason, you know, I needed to use a love song too, and that's why I chose Miles' song. I chose that kind of lonely song. I knew I'd be doing this pretty much alone in my studio, and I needed to fall in love with this idea, and, you know, a sense of longing. So, I don't know. I love this painting now, and I hope that it loves me back, but I don't know. But yeah, it now is a sculpture, and you know, I hope that other people can find kind of that time to spend with it. I hope people can see it kind of personified and see it as something that was, you know, he's tired now, he doesn't want to dance anymore, and that's fine. I'm over that painting. I guess I can go move on. I still love it, though. So, you know, there's that, but it served its purpose, and it allowed me to have that kind of moment through that song. So, I also have to thank Miles Davis and Bill Evans. A funny note about that song, no one can decide who wrote the song, if it was Bill Evans or Miles Davis, but I'm going to go with the Bill Evans camp, so even though it's kind of against popular choice. Anyways, that's about it. If you guys have any questions. Yes?
I have a question.
What's
that? My question was coming up as you're talking about, this dance thing about falling in love with this painting, but every time you talk about the painting, you're talking about how ugly and terrible it was. So why did you pick a painting that you thought was already ugly and terrible as opposed to a painting that you already might really love?
I think that would be too easy. I mean, I could pick a painting that I love, but, I mean, there's a logistic thing too. I would have to take it off its stretcher. It's very sacrificial. Yeah. It's true.
It's like easier to dance with something that you want to roll up afterwards.
It is easier, yeah, I know. I'm glad though that I was able to. I could have done it with a number of paintings, this is true, but this painting also fit the bill, like it was a monochrome painting. He was the right guy for the job.
And it's green, right?
It is green.
So,
yeah.
Blue and green.
Yeah. And the only monochrome in that title, I would say, is the green part, because the blue is more feeling, right? I mean, that's the whole album. So, he fit the bill. If there was like an interview of paintings, he would have gotten picked for the job. So.
Is that how you fall in love with your maids?
To fall in love with the maid? That has to do with work value.
Just like a comment, I think it's really funny that the result of you falling in love with this painting is turning it into a sculpture.
Mm.
It's transcendent. Really a painting anymore.
No, yeah. That's something I didn't really think about, you know, I don't know. Yeah, because I don't really know sculpture that much. I don't know what I'm doing, but I do like it, and I like this sculpture. So, I think it's nice that a painting can go from that to this, and also that painting's already been exhibited, and it has a life. So maybe that's another reason for picking that painting. If I picked something newer that I really loved, it wouldn't have that life. He wouldn't be a grown-up. He'd be like a baby. You don't really want to dance with a baby. I mean, you could, but yeah.
I'm curious, because when the conversation that you and I had earlier about this piece, the way you talk about it made it sound like the gesture of dancing and the two-love song was intended to help you fall in love with painting rather than specifically with
painting. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's both, but.
Yeah.
Whereas tonight you might just be talking about falling in love with the particular painting rather than painting in general. I guess my first question is, did I just misunderstand our earlier conversation? Like, is it about painting in general or your relationship with painting in general, or just
this? No, I need to fall in love with painting in general too.
Okay. And so then why? Because you haven't really talked about
it. Oh, yeah,
so
why?
What made you feel some kind of need to fall in love with painting in general again?
Problem with painting, I think, is a problem that I think I was released from a little bit with this exhibition, is that painting, I always am going to have to do it for some reason. I don't know why. It's just a dumb thing to say, but I think I'll be old and I'll just be painting no matter what. It's just always going to happen. It's just, who said it the other day? Oh, you're in love with the hairy stick. You have to, I'll always come back to it. And I don't know. It's like, I don't necessarily like it all the time, but I'm never going to abandon it for some reason. I don't know. So I have to reinvigorate it. I have to fall in love with it. So yes, I think it's about all painting, but this kind of gives this solidifies it as like a person, or it gives it personification. But yeah, I guess, yes, I should have addressed all painting, because this is true. Like, I have to be able to get back in the studio and make a painting. I mean, I don't have to, but I know that I'll be sitting there and my tubes of paint will just be looking at me like, why don't you use me? And I'll be like, fuck, fine. I'll use you. You know?
I'm wondering if your reasons for needing to fall in love with painting again have any relationship to this project. Because, for me, I think the idea of loving what you do as an artist was something that I became quite cynical about, or felt very cynical about at least for the moment of this project. And I guess, the worst one that sort of saw that idea of artists doing things and their others, there's kind of just an easy way to justify artists doing things and being paid badly on it or for it. And, at least at times, my experience with working on this project was like, I don't like this at all. This is horrible.
That's what I tell everybody. That's it.
So I'm wondering if there's a relationship to this broader project that need for you to fall in love with painting again comes out of, or if it comes from somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a long question. I'm confused. But let me just say this.
From shot stop you from loving painting again.
No, not at all. No, it was myself. I had a self hatred for painting before the show, but I guess it's a self-hatred in the way that, like, I love it, like, I have to do it, like, I will still make paintings. I think maybe that's the important part, is that I hate it so much because I love it. I hate it because I can't stop doing it. It's a true love, it's a love-hate, very important type of relationship. What's up?
Another kind of thing that I thought was curious was when we were talking about, like, Leslie, this is, like, ugly note at the beginning, like, a really harsh one.
Should have turned it up, but yeah.
Well, it's funny because, like, Miles Davis isn't scared to be ugly. That's part of why his music's, or the way that he plays is so compelling, or why a lot of jazz is so compelling. So then I thought it was kind of interesting, but also I'm not sure. for me, like when I came to the show, like I find it the most seductive thing in the room, like this video. Mm.
Oh,
like,
thank you.
Very romantic.
Thank you.
And I, like, why isn't ugliness a part of it at all? Since it seems like you were feeling really connected
to yeah.
your movement and the different like parts, like who was playing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like feels like if it's like there's a partnership between you and the painting, but there's also a partnership between the dancers and the song.
Oh, song.
And if the song has ugliness in it, it can be
yeah.
ugliness in the painting. Or in the, sorry, in the video.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I need it in the same way I need the hate for my paintings. I if it was just all nice, then I wouldn't want to make it myself.
But this is nice.
It is nice.
But
the whole
that's
thing.
My, that's what I'm saying. Is that there's sort of no
yeah.
ugly counterpart mm-hmm. like, to the way that oh well, this song is that love.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should have listened to that first note. It is very high-pitched. It's very... I love that part.
Yeah.
I love it. But it's just, it's debated that it's like the worst note on the album. Why did he start the song like that? The song's a masterpiece except for that part. I think it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't share... Not everyone shares that sentiment. But I mean, I think, like, I wouldn't have picked a more, like, subtle song at all. Never. Like, no.
That's not really what I'm asking.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm
missing. Oh, okay. I'm just curious why there is, like, why ugliness isn't an element in the video.
Oh, I think it's in the song.
Even in, like, the slowed down.
And I don't know. I would say some of my dancing seems somewhat unattractive. But I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit. Thank you. I don't know. Maybe you can't. It's because you can't see my feet. That's why. It's a trick. What are we going to say?
When I first watched the video, I felt like pretty voyeuristic.
Mm.
That kind of an audience reaction that you were thinking about when you made our video.
No, not... No, but yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, it is like this weird... Like the washer and dryer is back there.
It's pretty, like, intimate.
It is very intimate, I know. But see, that's the part that I kind of would go back to the humor thing. I think it's kind of funny, like, this beautiful, quiet dancing in a studio is, yeah, maybe it is very voyeuristic. I really didn't think about it like that at all, so.
I can see what you're saying, though, just
but that's,
because, like,
yeah.
the position of the camera is, like, you really places a barrier between you and, like, the other side.
Yeah, it's like,
and,
like,
there, so there's, like, this kind of, like... Eyes on the ledge.
the porky soul. It's so good. Okay. Well, thank you for that. I never thought of that, though. I guess I just... It was really just out of necessity. Like, I had to make this, and this is how I knew how. So, if it's a porky's hole, then that's fine. It's sexy. Anything else? Can we go drinking now? Okay. Well, thank you guys.